Good morning. It's time for the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm.
Will you still need me? Will you still feed me when I'm 64?
Good morning. I'm Dave Kubikian.
And good morning. I'm J. Marie Schaefer.
Jay Marie and I are two of the attorneys at the Herzog Law Firm, and some combination of us is here every single weekend talking to you about estate planning and Medicaid law, wills, powers of attorney, how to get loved ones the long-term care they need and the place they want to be. And we have offices in Albany, Clifton Park, Saratoga Springs, and down in Kingston. And you can call us this next hour at 518-476-5900. And we're happy to answer or try to answer all your questions about those topics. Good morning, Jamie. How are you?
I'm good. It is the first day of spring, and it looks like the weather is going to cooperate. So I hope everyone gets out this weekend.
What a way to start this first spring weekend. We're doing it in style. I feel like this time last year, Jamie, when we were all home because of COVID, the weather wasn't quite so nice yet.
No, I remember it being much colder last year when we were stuck inside. So the 60s is pretty nice for this time of year.
And, Ben, I don't know if we're taking a leap here, but I looked at the 10-day forecast. I don't see snow coming. So are we clear, you think?
Well, I don't think we're ever clear because we've had snow into May and June. But I think we're in pretty good shape. Temperatures are supposed to be, 50s, 60s for the week. So that's not so bad.
Mm-hmm. Ben, if you ever want to become an attorney, I'll tell you, that was the perfect attorney answer.
Well, I was kind of...
You kind of didn't answer it. You kind of answered it. I love it.
That's kind of the way you answer your questions. Well, I'm not really not sure. It could be, maybe not. I don't know.
Yeah, it depends. Yeah.
That's right. It depends.
You've learned over the years, Ben.
I have. I pay attention to you guys,
Ben's not sleeping there.
I swear, I know that if you and I overslept and we never made it to call into the show, I'm pretty sure Ben can run the whole operation.
It's funny you said that, David, because we were figuring, maybe David's not going to call in. It'll have to be Jay, Marie, and Ben today.
And Ben would do a fabulous job.
I would do okay. I would answer it just like David did.
I was wondering why you kept hanging up on me. Maybe you wanted that to happen.
Maybe.
Just maybe. Well, Jamie, it's been really busy in the office. We barely see each other, and it's because we have appointments all over the place. We're starting to see people at their own homes now. It's a little more comfortable. We're starting to see people where they are. Of course, we're still doing those videos. And we had a seminar week or a webinar week, and I think you did a couple webinars. How'd those go?
They were fabulous. We had a lot of people at the webinars, really great questions. What did I do this week? Yesterday I did How to Plan Your Estate, which was a really great one. It's kind of just an overview of everything you should think about in planning your estate, not getting into all the, details of the documents, but that's a good kind of intro one if you want to do that. Then you could go deeper and go into wills versus trusts or, aging in place to get more details. So I like the fact that we have a lot of different webinars, for you to look at on the website and learn about which area of the law you want to learn about.
That's a great point. And so we do this, live, air quotes, live webinars an entire week, once every month. And then we have every Wednesday, webinar Wednesday, 10 a.m., 2 p.m. webinars. But, don't worry about those days and times. If you say, well, I'd like to see them, but I want to see them after work, as an example, you can go to the website, herzoglaw.com, go to our webinar page and figure out what you want to start with. I find it's a great way to go to sleep at night, Jamie. I start listening to one of your webinars, and 3 minutes in, I'm out.
Very funny.
I'm sorry.
Does it put your baby to sleep also?
No, nothing puts him to sleep. So I've tried everything. So I'm sorry. You said How to Plan Your Estate was one of them. Do you remember what the other one was?
Let's see, we did this week, we did aging in place. Oh, I did elder law basics.
If you think about it, that's a good combination, because we're going from the baby steps of what an estate is and what it means to plan for that. What is estate planning exactly, to where does all that meet elder law, which is an incredibly important convergence of these two things, because eventually, right, estate planning is like when we're not here anymore, but elder laws, we're still here, right? And we want to live the way we want to live. So that's terribly important. I ended up talking about wills versus trusts, which is my all-time favorite of the webinar. Mm-hmm. It's just, for me, it's just short enough, and it hammers home what I think is the most most common myth we hear, which is, I thought there's no probate, I have a will.
Or
something like, I don't have enough money for a trust. And those two statements, I always think, are the most wrong statements we hear.
Yeah, that's right. It's the probate one is really a misconception. People think they have a will, right? And they have an executor, so I'm done now, right? And I see that when people come in to probate an estate, they're like, okay, so-and-so is the executor, so he can go ahead and sell the house. Hold on a minute, you know. We have a few steps before you can do that.
Right. Right. I'm sure we'll get callers this morning, Jamarine. Again, the number is 476-5900. But I did want to run this fact pattern by you, because I feel like it was, it hits at a really important dilemma that families have at times, and why it's really important to talk to someone like you or I or Debbie or Harry when we're dealing with some elder law situations. And I'll tell everyone, the first thing that the gentleman who I had the Zoom with, who was son, the first thing he said to me on the phone was, I'm not really sure why I'm speaking to you, because I don't know how you're going to help. My understanding is I could do this all by myself. So he was really setting me up for success here, Jamer. You know what I'm saying? Like, he was basically saying, I don't know why your job exists. And I was like, okay, all right, I understand. So let's talk about it. And so in a nutshell, dad is a widower. It's this gentleman's son and other son who are helping with his finances. Dad lives at an assisted living in the area. The assisted living, he's graduated, and that's not a good thing, to higher and higher levels of care. So the private pay amount for dad going forward is going to be $11,000 a month for the assisted living.
David, okay. Jay Marie.
Yes.
We do have a caller. We have John from Colony.
Wonderful.
Good morning, John Colony. How are you?
I'm okay. How are you doing? My question is, I have long-term care insurance. And so, what kind of planning I would still need to think about as far as protecting some of the assets? And I'm not sure which assets need protection, such as an IRA versus a retirement plan.
Jamer, you want to take that?
Sure. Yep, that's a great question. So even though you have long-term care insurance, it, depending on the policy, it may not pay all the costs of your care, like in a nursing home. So you probably would still want to protect your assets. Most people put their house. Do you still own your house?
Yes.
So that's one asset to put into a trust. That's going to protect the house. There's no real downside to you, because you still live in the house. Nothing changes. We're just going to change the title on your house so it gets out of your name. Now you mentioned retirement plans, and the good thing about retirement plans is that they are exempt for Medicaid purposes, so you wouldn't have to put those in a trust to protect them. So they're okay the way they are. So the retirement plans are okay. You'd put your house in a trust, and then you'd look at what other assets you have and see what else you would want to protect.
Okay. You know, that first point that Jamarie had raised is really important. So do you have an idea of what the long-term care insurance provides for you? Because there are some policies that can provide upwards of four or $450 a day. And there, that's quite, I mean, that's going to cover all your needs for the length of that plan, right? So if it's a two-year coverage plan at $400 a day, that's a lot of help. My parents have a policy like that, except it's a little longer in terms of the length. So what my parents did, because they still need to plan for one day not being here, right? Long-term care insurance is for your long-term care needs. They still need an estate plan. So, Jamie, they did a revocable trust that doesn't help at all with long-term care because they think they're covered. I've had clients, especially a couple at the end of last year, where their long-term care insurance benefits were only a couple hundred dollars a day. So, say $200 a day. So, a nursing home's $450, $460, $470 a day. They're still going to have to private pay maybe $8,000 a month if one day they need a nursing home. So what they did, and General, sir, what you may want to do is, depending on the coverage, right, you may want to do the Medicaid Asset Protection Trust and say, well, wait a minute, I have long-term care insurance. Why do I need that? Well, you do have long-term care insurance. The amount of coverage you have doesn't rise to the nursing home level, can cover assisted living perfectly, so we'll take it. But we say, let's protect everything else and kind of say, well, this long-term care insurance doesn't exist in the future or it gets too expensive. At least I got that clock ticking on 5 years of protection, just like Jane Marie said, to cover your house or any other assets that may need help. So for some of my clients, their plan in general is in 5 years from now, when they've reached 5 years of having a Medicaid trust, they'll reevaluate their long-term care policy and see how much it costs and say, well, you know what? We might drop it, or you know what? We're going to keep it anyway. And at least we're avoiding probate with the trust. And if it, you know, we're kind of putting two band-aids on the cut just in case.
My policy, I understand, is a New York State partnership so that a father who, you know, required, then, I believe that they will still take my pension and even Social Security, I believe, to cover any difference between the daily amount, which I believe right now is currently in 300 range, and it is a 3%, I believe, inflation cost rider to it.
So, sir, you have what we call the Cadillac of long-term care insurance plans. No offense to other long-term care insurance plans and no offense to other car companies out there. My parents have that same policy or you know, same New York State partnership. So on the back end, the idea of that policy is if you live so long with long-term care that you've gone through all your benefits under that long-term care insurance policy, you will become automatically asset eligible, essentially, for the Medicaid program. But the income rules will still apply. So they will look at your pension. They will look at Social Security and other forms of income as things. So you may be more in my parents' shoes. What they did is they just did old-fashioned estate planning because they had that policy. They did a revocable trust. They did put their house in, not to protect the house because of long-term care needs, but because they want to avoid probate. They want to, I mean, Jane Marie can tell you, she's got about 150 estates going on right now where it's various degrees of awful in terms of the administration. So that's where you may want to do planning, less protection and more proactive, making life easy for the next generation and avoiding probate.
So the IRA, Roth, or traditional IRA, they don't have to go in a trust or probate, and they go through via beneficiary?
Yes, that's right. If you have a beneficiary, well, you do have beneficiaries on there, so that avoids probate automatically. So you'd just be looking at your other assets to put in a revocable trust to try and avoid probate.
Okay. My last question is, if retired and I still do some work, and whatever I do, whether driving somebody, emergency vehicle, whatever, if I were involved in an accident, they get sued, which are the IRA protected or just the house or other assets? Is that a question?
Your retirement plans are going to be protected. Yep.
Okay.
There's protection there. If you have life insurance, that's going to be protected.
Okay.
So that those are automatic, you know, protections at the federal level. Your house isn't going to be protected.
Okay.
From what I understand, only up to a certain amount. So no, it's not going to be protected. So. And then even if you put it in a revocable trust, it won't be protected.
Oh.
Yeah, what you're going to want to do if you're going to still be actively working in something where, you know, your error can result in you being sued is you're going to want to have insurance, different forms of insurance. I mean, if you're kind of doing it informally, be careful. But certainly your car insurance covers you to a certain degree, and if you did something really wrong or going beyond the limits of that policy, then certainly all your assets could be in jeopardy. So you want to be careful.
Okay. So if I want to do any long-term care for the elderly, then I can still come and see, make an appointment to discuss the house and any other assets outside of the IRA. As to how to protect them. Is that correct?
Well, right. So less protecting. So if we're worried about being sued, certainly it's protection, and there's different kinds of trust that could help you there for future lawsuits, right? Obviously, let's try not to get sued. But regardless of it, because, you know, as Harry normally says, no one gets out of here alive, we need to do that old-fashioned estate planning, you know, make sure everything's going to the right people and ideally avoiding probate.
I see. Okay, and what number should I call if I want to contact you guys for an appointment?
That's the best question I've heard so far.
You can give us a call at 518-465-7581.
Well, thank you.
All right, thank you.
Bye.
What a great question.
Those are some really good questions there. That's great. Yeah, not everyone has that New York State partnership policy. And in fact, they're not even selling it anymore. But for those who do have it, it is a fantastic policy because you have that insurance paying for your care. And then when the insurance ends, Medicaid will pay for your care.
Right.
So it's a
bit won't protect the income, but it will help with the assets.
Yeah, that's right. Well, your parents did that because you wouldn't take care of them, David.
That's not true. They knew that. To be honest, I think they knew that they wanted to protect assets.
Yeah,
and
that's true.
It was before I was out of law school, so it wasn't like I refused to do a Medicaid trust for them or I was going to overcharge them. They just decided to go that other route, and it sounds very good. It's interesting because the carrot out there, right? If you're listening at home, you're like, well, why is this policy so good? If you live through the policy, if you need so much care for so long that the policy no longer will cover you, I think they have 3 years of benefits. The carrot at the end of the road is, well, you'll qualify for Medicaid in terms of your assets. You have millions of dollars of assets. You will qualify for long-term care coverage in a nursing home. The income rules will still apply. Well, what's wrong with that? Well, it's a carrot for a reason, right? You may not reach that carrot. 3 years of long-term care is a long period of long-term care. Now, it's becoming more normal for people to have that length of care because there's more cognitive issues and dementia where our bodies are physically fit and we're going to have long-term care for a while. But most people will never get to the Medicaid part of it. Why? Because, you know, they're going to end up, you know, life happens, right? That's what's going to happen.
That's right.
Jim-Marie, if I could, I just want to get back to this fact, and I'll talk a lot faster because I know we're going to have more callers. So a gentleman was calling for dad. He questioned why we exist as a profession, which was a great start. Then he mentioned dad. Dad's at $11,000 a month in almost the highest level in the assisted living in terms of care and in terms of cost. And dad's income is not very high. Dad's got a little bit of money in the bank, not too much. And what he and his brother have been doing, they've been great sons, Jamie. For the last couple of years, they've been helping pay for Dad's assisted living.
That's great.
Yeah. Now, it turns out Dad also has about $100,000 of cash value in two separate life insurance policies. So he was calling to say, well, what happens when we need to go to a nursing home and Medicaid and et cetera? I said, well, listen, just so you know, there's cash value on these policies. This counts against him. He's not just going to walk in and qualify. So what do we do? And I said, well, have you documented how you're paying for Dad and your brother's paying for Dad? Do we have checks going straight to the facility for him? Because what we could probably get away with doing is reimbursing you from Dad's cash value, the life insurance, to lower his resources to make it easier for him to qualify when he needs to qualify. Mm-hmm. But that's not why I'm bringing this up, Jamie. This is the question. And for everyone out there, you one day you might deal with a version of this. Do they say, the heck with money, we're going to pay out of pocket, we're going to spend all of Dad's dollars for an $11,000 a month assisted living, or do we look at a $13,000 or $14,000 a month nursing home where Medicaid could pay for him? And what's the care difference? What's the difference between a really good nursing home and a very good assisted living, right? And how do they factor in the cost, Jamie, of this? Mm-hmm. And I said to him, listen, I don't envy your position. You're going to figure out one day what you got to do here, money-wise, because although it's very nice you guys are paying for Dad, at $11,000 a month, that's a lot of money.
That's right. And usually at that level of assisted living, I imagine it was a type of a memory care facility. They're usually the ones that are...
Yes.
Much more. So that's very similar to a nursing home in terms of the level of care that you're getting. So I see, the question there, could they move him over to a nice nursing home and then not have to pay that cost out of pocket?
That's it, Jean-Marie. That's it.
Yeah.
When and do you there pull are, the trigger on that?
Right. You look around, you find a nursing home that you feel comfortable with, and I think it would be a smart move to do that. $11,000 a month is pretty darn expensive.
Yeah, and, my personal opinion, not that it matters, is at some point, especially when we're talking about memory care and cognitive stuff, you want someone, your loved one, to get the right amount of care and be treated with respect, and that should happen at a good nursing home as well. If someone doesn't know where they are, if they don't know the difference between this building and that building, this is assisted living, memory care, that's a nursing home, and it's not really computing in their brain the difference, and you can't really tell the difference in care, that's when I think you shift over to what saves money and what doesn't. Until then, I'm a care guy. I'm whatever the best care is, that's what I want, right? If one day my parents have care needs, forget the fact they have long-term care insurance, the care is always, to me, going to dictate what to do. But we can't avoid the fact that money is a thing. I mean, that's why we do these trusts, so that you don't have to make that decision, right? We can protect money and then unprotect as we please to pay for whatever care needs we have. Right? Our hands aren't tied.
Right, you want to have choices, right? Because part of what the choice is about the money, but part of it is about the best care for you. So, it's a fine line you have to balance there. But you have more choices if you have a trust. You can choose home care and have it paid by Medicaid. You can choose assisted living. You could do partial revocations to take money out of the trust. And you can choose a nursing home.
Absolutely.
So that's why I think the trust is the most flexible.
Absolutely. So that brings me to my second and third point. Number two, he, at the end of the call, was really, really happy that he ended up calling Herzog and speaking with me. He now understands why he needs an elder law attorney whenever he does make that decision. What he read online wasn't saying, well, you could reimburse yourself for all the monies you've spent. And so right now he's going to be in the process of putting together proof of all the money he has given to this facility on behalf of Dad. which he didn't have an obligation to do. And at the end of the day, there's going to be, you know, lots of money saved, because if he did not talk to someone like you or I, he would be told, well, life insurance cash value is a problem. Start using that for dad. And when you get down to the $15,900 you're allowed to have, then we'll handle your Medicaid app for you.
Yeah, that's right.
That's not actually the right answer, right? We could avoid all that private paying for that period of time. So that's point number two. We do actually exist for a reason, I guess, is my point, Jamie. I don't know if you knew that, but we do have a job.
We do. We have a good result at the end of the day, right? So you were just saying, about spending down all your money. I mean, that's sometimes people get the wrong advice about that and come in, or they think that they haven't done a trust, right, so that they don't have a choice, so they don't bother trying to call an elder law attorney. We see that fairly often, and it's, it's never too late to do planning, right?
Exactly right. And, I mean, I hate when we talk like this, because I feel like it comes off as like an infomercial, and this is why we're so great and so on. We sincerely hope that we don't need to do a lot of these planning techniques, especially the crisis planning, because that means your loved one's not doing very well. We'd prefer to have conversations about, you know, basic wills for people and powers of attorney and just the nice fluffy stuff. This is far more intense. We had a lot of stress on family members. They're not sure what to do. They're not sure what the rules are. They don't know what it means that a retirement's a Roth or a retirement is IRA is not a Roth. It's confusing. And so, you know, you use attorneys in this field, whether it's Herzog or anyone else, to help explain the process. And then ideally, all things being, you'll save money and so on. You mentioned, Jamie, you know, you can't instantly protect money, right? You can instantly unprotect money, though. And that's why you do that trust. Another client from yesterday as well, down in our Kingston office, an existing client, they've had a trust forever. They have the opportunity to move some money outside the trust to dad and get mom qualified for Medicaid and never spend a dollar of private paying. But they're not going to do that, Jamie. They're going to decide to actually private pay for a certain amount of time. That's their choice. They're effectively unprotecting money to private pay for a nursing home for mom, make sure she's situated in the nursing home that they choose, and they're going to basically dangle some money to the nursing home to make sure that happens. And we won't get into how that process works, but basically they are choosing to unprotect money, even though they don't have to get the result they want. And that's like, in a nutshell, I feel like that's our goal. It's not to save every dollar. It's for your loved one to get the care you think they need in the place you want them to be at. And if you want to unprotect money, great. But we know worst case scenario, which is best case scenario, you never need long-term care. You have a wonderful life. You pass away one day. Well, at least we avoided probate. That trust, Jamie, avoided probate.
That's right. And fabulous thoughts, and we will hear more about them after the break.
Oh, I like that. I like that, Jay Murray. Very good. We have reached the bottom of the hour. We'll be right back with the second half of the Herzog Law Firm's Estate Medicaid Planning Hour coming up right after this.
You've been listening to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm. Join us every week to learn more about protecting the assets you've worked hard for, options available for Medicaid planning, and more. With offices located in Corporate Woods in Albany, West Harrison Street in Saratoga Springs, Executive Woods in Clifton Park, and Flatbush Road in Kingston, our attorneys are here to help you. If you'd like to schedule an appointment to speak with David, Jane Marie Harry, or Debbie, please call us during normal business hours, Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. To contact us at our Albany office, call 518-465-7581. Our Saratoga Springs office at 518-581-8131. Our Clifton Park office at 518-952-4010. And our Kingston office at 845-338-6405. Let the Herzog Law Firm help you navigate a plan that works for you and your family. Now back to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm.
Welcome back. This is J. Marie Schaefer.
Good morning. This is Dave Kubikin.
And this is the Herzog Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour, where we answer your questions about wills, trusts, Medicaid, probate, guardianship, all anything that's on your mind relating to elder law and estate planning. And you can call in and ask us questions. The number is 518-476-5900. 518-476-5900.
And Jay Marie and David, we do have a caller. It is Tina from Bern.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm great. Good morning. My question is this. I have a bank account, obviously, with my husband's name on it. My husband has Alzheimer's. Should I be taking his name off my account?
Well, that's a really good question. And I hate to say it depends, but you most likely should be if you want to plan to have Medicaid pay for his care. You're going to want to have as little in his name as possible and then switch things over to your name.
We also have long-term care, and we have the Cadillac version.
Oh, you have the Cadillac version. Okay.
Yeah.
So.
Well, that certainly changes things. The Cadillac.
Yeah,
I like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
so, Jimmy, if I may. So the answer depends on everything else, right? So normally we want, as you know, the assets that someone has, their resources, to go down so that way they can qualify for Medicaid, because we're looking for them to qualify for Medicaid, right?
Right.
Having the kind of long-term care insurance you have means, well, that's not as big of an issue. We wouldn't necessarily want you to take his name off of anything as much as lower the balances in that. We still need a destination for his Social Security or pensions or whatever other sources of income he has. So he still needs to have a bank account, and we still want it to be a bank account that's got your name on it just for purposes of avoiding probate, right? God forbid he passes away. We don't want Jay Marie to be doing some sort of administration to get that money, right? We want your access to it immediately. So the bigger question is, how are you and he going to deal with your estate planning goals? And just like our caller at the bottom half of the hour, the first part of the hour, I don't know if you heard, he had that long-term care insurance policy as well. And Jay Marie and I said, well, you know, you got to just go back to basics of estate planning. We got a house, we have accounts, we have retirement accounts, we might have insurance. Where do those go upon not just his demise, but yours as well? What's the most efficient way to do that? Are we confident that you're going to always be paying for that Cadillac plan every year going forward? He may have needs now, but you may not for a while. So, you know, you may want to do a revocable trust and say, to heck, well, I'm covered with long-term care. You may say, you know what? I understand I'm covered. I may do the Medicaid trust notwithstanding that, just in case the environment changes, just in case, you know, the Cadillac plan, you know, goes out of business. I don't know. I'm not expecting that to happen, by the way. But you may want to hedge your bets in the process of avoiding probate, right? Mm-hmm. So what do you do with this specific bank account? It really does depend on what the bigger landscape is, and then we make that bank account fit that bigger picture.
Okay. Right now, there's probably way too much in there. But he's obviously not going to need long-term care for a while. So I have been told to put my children as the beneficiary on my bank account, and they're the beneficiaries on our retirements, et cetera. We do own a home, and that's also in the will stating that if any of my children want the home, they would purchase it from their siblings. I was just concerned if I took his name off my bank account and I passed before him, the monies would automatically go to my children. And not to say that we're going to have what I have in there now. Mm-hmm. So would an irrevocable trust still be something I should be looking into?
I would say either trust could work. And, Jamie, I promise I'm going to stop talking at some point here. I love the idea of giving money to kids. I don't recommend that, though, because your husband may still be alive and may still be alive for some time. I do think that rather than just going with straight beneficiaries, doing trusts. I believe in trusts. I think they're always the right way to go, even if it's just a revocable one. And what that allows you to do is throw your house into a trust, either kind, right? You could have, you know, you still need a bank account in your name. You could have your kids linked to that, but I don't see a downside as to having your husband's name on a bank account, but maybe lower the balance. Throw a bunch of that money into a trust, again, either kind, because we know that trust has rules beyond your debt. So rules okay. that have money available for your husband, rules that have money and home going to the kids, rules that allow a kid to buy out the other kid if they want the house. Everything you just said, you could actually make it part of one bigger circle, this big trust that has the same rules you're talking about, that can make money available, that can make sure your kids are covered, and can make sure that your husband has all his needs covered if, God forbid, you didn't wake up tomorrow. So right. I'm not going to tell you which kind of trust to do, but I would recommend you come in and meet with Jaymarie and to talk mm-hmm. further about how this all works, because so often, Jaymarie, I'm sure you could add to this, people have these specific questions about a specific asset, and it just doesn't work that way. Right, but we need the bigger picture.
Gotcha. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, thank you so much, and I will be giving you a call. Thank you. Appreciate it. Have a great day.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And we have another caller. We have Diana in Albany.
Good morning, Diana.
Good morning. I have a question regarding a Roth account I inherited. Mm-hmm. How do I have to take money out of that since I'm 76 years old?
No, you're not going to be required to. Not like a regular IRA.
No.
Right.
Should I be taking money out of it?
Well, you know, it depends on what your other sources of income are. Like your Roth, if you take money out of a Roth IRA, it's not taxable. So that's fantastic.
Oh, so it's not taxable?
That's right.
Good to know. Okay. My finances are not top notch. You know, my income.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, I can't even afford a regular senior housing for what I make.
Okay, so then this is a perfect opportunity that you could dip into the Roth IRA to help pay for that, and you're not, at least you know, you're not going to be paying income taxes on whatever you receive out of that.
So then I could withdraw the amount that I need and not a set amount.
That's right. You could plan to take out just what you need. Or vary it, right? Depends on your needs at the time.
Yeah. When I do taxes, do I have to break down the funds?
Well, you're going to get a 1099. Well, actually, you won't. A 1099, but the Roth is going to be non-taxable. So it'll show you what you receive and what's taxable and what's not taxable.
Okay.
So you don't have to worry about keeping track of that.
Okay, great. All right, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Bye now.
Bye.
Thanks for the call.
And we have another caller. We have Alexandra from Loudonville.
Good morning, Alexandra.
Good morning.
Yes, is this Debbie?
It's Jaymarie and Dave.
Oh, okay, that's all right. I have a question.
How are you?
Fine. I was wanting to put my husband's name on the deed with not just my name, okay? And I asked Harry to do it, and he got back to me and said, I can't do it. He said, you don't own the house. And I said, who does? And he said, Land Bank. Have you ever heard of them? Land Bank? Albany Company Land Bank owns it. And I said, how can they own it? I own it. And he said, he can't do it because, they foreclosed on the house. He said, they foreclosed on your house. And I said, they didn't because I'm still living in it. It showed on his papers he sent to me, he said, March 1 of 20, they said they foreclosed on my house, and I'm still in it. I don't know anything about it. How can that be? You know?
Sounds like something we can't answer on the phone. I would suggest you come into the office and we can look it up, or look over the paperwork you have and contact the bank. It's going to be a little bit, more complicated than that. We have to go verify the paperwork that was filed with the county clerk and make sure it was filed, rightly or wrongly. And if it's filed wrongly, then we have to correct that.
Right, because, he said they foreclosed on my house, and it's like a year and 2 months ago, and I don't know about it.
Yeah, that's
very odd. I certainly hope that's not the case. But as Jamarie said, I think that this is one of the things where we need papers on the table and going through with magnifying glasses and seeing what's what.
Harry,
give us a call. Let us know when you can come in.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks so much for the call. I'm sorry you're dealing with this.
And we have another caller. We have George from Amsterdam.
Good morning, George.
Good morning. How are you guys this morning?
We're good.
What's going on?
I got a couple simple questions. I know that only the distributions or the monthly payout from a regular IRA is attachable for Medicaid purposes. Am I correct in that assumption?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, they look at the income and,
Does Roth have any more of a any other distinctions other than the traditional?
Roth's a very good question because it's not as clear whether Roths are treated the same as IRAs because Medicaid hasn't made a distinction between regular and Roth IRAs. So. And I hate to be a lawyer and say it depends, but some counties will treat it like a regular IRA and you have to take out your monthly distributions and then they'll exempt the Roth IRA. So that is one way to handle the Roth IRAs.
Okay. So in lack of a ruling, I hate to use the word assume, what we're saying is that they should be treated the same way as a traditional IRA.
I believe so. I mean, the other alternative, and there's pros and cons to both, is to take your Roth IRA, liquidate it, and put it into a trust. And that will, definitely protect it from Medicaid. You will lose the advantage of the Roth growing tax-free. So that's a little downside to that.
Mm-hmm.
Because with a Safeway assumption...
Well, once it's liquidated, you could actually put it into the Roth under the umbrella of a tax-exempt mutual fund, let's say.
That's right. You could take it and put it in the Roth tax-free mutual fund.
All right. I'm going to move on because there's other callers. Now, my other question is this.
Mm-hmm.
A widow who receives a 50% of the husband's pension.
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned earlier that pension proceeds were exempt. Would that be exempt from attachment for her because it was his pension and she inherited 50% of the distribution?
Yes, because it's still a qualified retirement plan. Yeah.
Okay. All right, so that would not be attachable.
Yeah, what are you planning? Going on getting in some trouble?
No, I have an older sister that's actually experiencing this, and I'm doing my darndest to try to get to the point where she will go in and see you guys with her children, because we have our stuff with you folks, and I'm just trying to get enough ammunition to get her to go in there and sit down with you folks to do something for her.
Yeah.
So those are my two questions for today, okay? And I want to thank you very much.
Thanks so much.
Thank you.
We're waiting, Ben, for you to tell us there's another caller.
Yeah, that's right.
No other callers right now.
All right.
Mary, before we get into the guardianships, because I know you want to talk about a couple of fact patterns you have, I just want to say when callers say attachable, right, when if you're listening out there and you hear something's attachable, it's not attachable, I don't like that word. I don't think that's the appropriate word for us to be using. Medicaid makes a distinction between what is a resource of yours, like think of it like an asset, and then what is considered income of yours. And they have rules both for assets as well as for income. So a lot, you know, when Jane Marie is saying, well, it's a qualified retirement plan, we're saying it's not going to be counted as an asset. It's not going to go towards that $15,900 you're allowed to have in assets or resources. Instead, the income that comes from that qualified retirement account is part of the income calculations that Medicaid does. So I don't want anyone out there to think, well, this kind of retirement, we're good, we're scot-free, and there's nothing Medicaid can do. The good news is it won't keep someone from qualifying for the program because it's not an asset. The bad news is they do look at income that somebody has, even if they're qualified, asset-wise, and there are separate income rules. So I just want to, that's a public service announcement, throw it out there. We can't have anyone running out there thinking, you know, telling everyone they know, guess what, pensions, they can't touch your pension. That's not exactly how it works. The good news is you qualify for the program. The bad news is there are income rules. And then, again, Jamie, if we're in the home care situation, there's more good news then because we can actually protect that income as well. So just want to throw that out there.
Nope, that's a good point. We're using words like attachment kind of loosely here.
So, Jane Marie, tell me, guardianships.
Guardianships. We are busier than ever with guardianships, and it's really just a warning to try and get your documents done in advance. I was doing a guardianship. We have a client who's in a nursing home and doesn't have a power of attorney and healthcare proxy, and her niece is trying to take care of things for her. And because she, you know, has dementia, she's in a nursing home, it's hard to see if we can get her to sign a power of attorney, right? Normally, we try and have someone sign the power of attorney, but because of COVID restrictions, no one can go in the nursing home. We get on a Zoom call with her, and she can't hear that well. So even with headphones on, she can't hear us. You know, that's unexpected, right? Normally, if we could go in, we'd be face-to-face. We would be able to get her to sign a document. So we had our initial call with the judge this week, and her attorney thinks she does have capacity to sign, that it's just a matter of waiting a little bit until the place opens up and we can get in and have a long conversation with her. So, for those of you who haven't been able to get in to see your parents in nursing homes, assisted livings, I hope it opens up soon, you know, but it's creating these problems where things are, like, for example, all her accounts were frozen, bills hadn't been paid for a long time. So that's an interesting situation that was created by COVID, right?
So, Jane Marie, question for you on behalf of everyone that's listening. How is a guardianship different than so if I have a power of attorney, am I avoiding a guardianship? And why is the guardianship such a formal thing compared to a power of attorney?
So if you have a power of attorney, right, then you definitely would avoid the guardianship. The guardianship, it's a court proceeding. We have, in this case, me and three lawyers involved. The court appoints a lawyer called the court evaluator to give an assessment of the case, independent. The court appoints an attorney for the person that we're trying to get guardianship over, you know, and we represent the niece who's trying to get the guardianship. And then there's a court. I mean, we had this court hearing. There were probably seven or eight people on the Zoom call. So that's a whole lot of people, right, to try and help this one person. And, you know, it's expensive, it's time-consuming, it's complicated. The other thing is, even if when you get appointed, you have to file annual reports with the court every year.
So I think it was really great that in this situation, the judge and the other lawyers realized all the how complex the guardianship would be, and were good enough to say, look, she may have capacity to sign something. Let's wait a few weeks and see if, you know, you can get in there and, you know, she can get hearing aids or she can hear you better and we can talk to her and try and get her to sign these documents willingly, rather than go through this complicated mess of a guardianship. That's why having a power of attorney done in advance before you get into this situation is really so important. You know, she's in her 80s. You know, had she done this when she was 60 or 70 even, we wouldn't be in this situation.
And what I understand, the in a guardianship, the court is taking away powers from someone, but in the power of attorney, you're just giving someone else also the power to transact for you. So, you know, when you do a power of attorney, you're not losing power. You're just saying, when it's a rainy day, here's who could do things for me. Guardianship, it's pretty formal, and there's three attorneys involved because the court is deciding whether or not to take away powers from, you know, this person possibly forever, and giving those powers to someone else. So it certainly seems like the less expensive way, the way where you have more powers, is to do the power of attorney. And you could always change your power of attorney. You change it over time. You know, right now you pick, you know, I may pick my parents or my brother, but, you know, in 20 years I may pick my daughter because she's not old enough to be my agent.
And you're in control, right? So you can change that anytime you want. You could even limit the powers if you wanted to. I mean, we don't suggest that. You could limit the powers you give your power of attorney. So you're more in control of what you're asking that person to do for you. And you're right, in the court, they're declaring you incapacitated. So they're taking away all decisions from you, which is why it's very important that, it's so important, right, that we have three lawyers. They're all talking about this and making sure it's right to do it.
David, Jay Marie, we do have another caller. We have Carol in Schenectady.
Good morning, Carol.
Good morning. I've certainly enjoyed your webinars this week, and I thank you for that. I do have a question. I have a traditional IRA, and I know at 72 I'm going to have to start taking money out of there. I was just wondering if there's anything I can do with that IRA to prevent having to take that money out, as the government requires.
Well, you know, they gotta get their tax dollars at some point, and so, you know, they change the rules as to what happens one day when you die and leave that IRA to other people. You know, they're gonna get their tax dollars a little faster. They change the date for when you take these distributions from 70 and a half to 72, right? So they actually delayed when you'd be taking it as well. And what they're trying to do is make it so eventually these dollars are getting taxed all this time, decades and decades. This money grew, and tax was never paid on those dollars at the outset. It wasn't like a Roth IRA where you it's after-tax dollars. So, you know, if you're saying you don't need the money, that's fantastic. You're going to end up taking the money because you don't have a choice. You'll just take the minimum. You'll end up paying taxes. And what's nice about how this works is that typically when people, you know, you're 72, you're theoretically not working anymore. Your income tax bracket's a lot lower than it was when you were in the heart of your career. So it's actually not a bad deal, right? It is time to pay the piper at some point.
Exactly.
I don't know of any techniques to avoid it. I'm quite certain that it's unavoidable.
Right. It's not that I don't mind paying the tax. It's just that, you know, you have to do this every year, I think it is. And is there a way to avoid having to take the money out every year? Is there something I can do up front that just settles that whole thing?
Well, I mean, if you wanted to get crazy, you could just liquidate the whole thing now, have it all be income this year, and then it's just a pile of money. I probably wouldn't recommend doing that. I'm sure somewhere there's a financial advisor driving off the side of the road when he hears this because of that. Right? Right. The idea is let's get this growth and pay taxes over time. Sounds fantastic.
Right.
But certainly you could just get rid of the IRA if you wanted to. That opens up all sorts of other possible detriments to doing that, though. I mean, you do that and all of a sudden you have this large long-term care event. You know, if you've been listening, we just went from a protected asset, right, that mm-hmm. is treated only for income purposes for Medicaid, and mm-hmm. you just turned it into a pile of money that is absolutely a resource for purposes of Medicaid. So you got to be real careful, and you may just have to deal with these distributions, you know, annually.
Okay. Now, does the government send you a letter and tell you how much you have to take out and you decide what to do with it from there?
No, generally, wherever you have the IRA, the broker or the financial institution, they'll send you a letter as you're getting close to 72 telling you that you need to take the distribution. They can calculate, they will calculate it for you and ask how you want to receive it. I was just thinking while David was talking, there's a tax benefit if you have some, you know, charitable intention, if you donate to charity. If you donate your RMD to charity, you don't have to pay income tax on it. So that sometimes that fits in with people's estate planning goals to use that to make their charitable donations rather than, you know, the money they have in the bank account.
Oh, okay. That's a possibility. I am leaving the IRA to a charity so that no one will have to pay taxes on it. It's a nonprofit. So I did. That's my will. That's in writing. So that will happen. But maybe that's the thing to do. If I take those contributions and send it to a charity, then I don't pay taxes.
That's right. There's a way you do that. I would contact, you know, like I said, the institution that holds the IRA. I believe it has to go right from them to the charity. Okay. But they can set up that paperwork for you.
That's a win-win situation. Great idea.
Thanks, and that's a great way to end. Enjoy your weekend.
Have a great weekend. Enjoy the weather.
Thank you for listening to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm. For more information on their services, please visit herzoglaw.com. If you'd like to speak with one of their attorneys, please contact the Albany office at 518-465-7581, the Saratoga office at 518-581-8131, or their Kingston office at 845-338-6405.